Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Great to have you here today. We love all Bay Area fans. We really do. As a matter of fact, we love you more than your owners do. We love you more than your own team does. And I can prove it. We're here. We're not talking about what city we're moving to, where we're going next. We're here.
Although, if you give me $12 billion, I am so gone.
Where wouldn't you move for $12 billion?
The sun.
You'd avoid the sun. I tell you, I wouldn't want any Antarctica. I wouldn't want an Arctica. The suffix Artica in any location. But for $12 billion, yeah, I'll open up my horizons and think about just about anything.
Yeah, my interest in other people ends. In fact, my interest in other people ends at about $12.
I was about to say, $12 billion. I bet you I could get you for like $26.
Oh, I'm absolutely slutty when it comes to cash.
We've got an awful lot coming up here. An awesome conversation that we had today with Raja Bell. We're going to run that past you one more time, coming up at about quarter till, and then at 5:30, we're going to get you out to the Warriors live tonight with J.D. Covey and Jim Barnett, Warriors and Phoenix Suns. We got an awful lot coming up here. We're not going to have a Tuesday trifecta, but we do have a little something to harken back to the old show traditions in just a moment here in phone call form. But first, let's say hello to Coach P in Fremont. Coach P, how are you?
I'm fantastic, Damon. How are you doing today?
Very well, thank you.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Well, you know, I mean, I was fantastic until obviously here in the stadium thing, but, you know, this is nothing new to us A's fans. I mean, you're talking to someone that's been hearing news about stadiums since he was in junior high and I'm in my late 30s now.
Yeah.
And you guys are 100% right. 9-5-7, the game does love the Bay Area more than certain teams. But, you know, this stadium situation and the A's in general, I mean, It's a broken record that keeps repeating. It's that friend that's in that relationship, that toxic relationship that you know he needs to get out, but he just doesn't. I mean, that's what it is. And I believe Ray laid out the options and his finish right on. And I would throw in the other thing that might happen is that the whole team pretty much gets sold away. I mean, this is reality. Maybe they kind of feel that that's happening and they're putting a little extra on this year. I don't know. Kind of see it, maybe start off 1-6 and then maybe get past you and get a little hot now just to be like, hey, everyone against the world here, let's just do it this year.
I mean, you want to talk about time being a flat circle, and Coach P, your phone's breaking up a little bit. It's getting a little splashy on us, but thanks always for the call. The thing about the A's is they're a first place team. You know, like, there is a reason to get you excited about the actual season that's happening. And come on out and have a little fun at the old ballpark for a really reasonable price. And isn't it just great to be back? Well, now you got the specter of all this hanging all over all that. The amount of self-sabotage in terms of any excitement or enthusiasm that you might be putting together about this team has always been hard to sustain if you're a fan. player to be named later, has become stadium to be named later, has become city to be named later. It's hard to commit, Ray.
It's not hard to commit. You just commit to watching from afar.
Oh, that's great. Who doesn't want to do that?
Well, no, but I mean, that's the sandwich that is the only item on the menu. It's, we're doing fine, but, gee, now I'm bored again. And even though you've got hospitals to sort of restaff, and you've got an educational system that has been basically in stasis for more than a year, we'll need $2,600,000 up front now, today, or we will think about walking. All right, think about walking. So well, you know what? Because you know what? If your folks get sick, the ball club ain't going to help you.
No.
The hospital's going to help you.
No.
So, you know, fine, threaten.
Somebody says the Giants threatened to move to Tampa Bay before getting their new stadium. Yeah, but that wasn't a threat. That was an actual thing that could have happened until richer people with deeper pockets who were well-intended said, well, we're not going to let that happen. There wasn't a just throwing stones in all directions. Let's see if we can hit a city that might be interested. That wasn't a threat. That was a tangible reality and an alternate reality that the Giants did have in front of them that Peter McGowan said, let's not do that.
That's the myth. Here's the real story, because I covered it. The Giants talked to Tampa Bay about moving because Bob Lurie had had enough. But two owners who had very different reasons to organize the no vote, Jerry Reinsdorf and Peter O'Malley, put the brakes on that. If it had gone to a vote, it was going to lose and lose big.
So McGowan's not the savior that
McGowan
he gets billed
is
as.
Not the savior. He's the opportunist.
Well, either way, but I have
mean,
that
well,
guy.
But I mean, it's important because the Giants didn't threaten to leave because they wanted a new stadium from the city. They threatened to leave because Bob Lurie couldn't get a ballpark in San Jose. The new stadium came well after the team was sold. And the city actually, other than infrastructure and security, which they're still paying for now, didn't build that stadium for the Giants. The Giants chased up, you know, bank loans. If the A's want to do a bank loan for $12 billion and build their own thing, party down. John Fisher's a hero. He doesn't want that.
No.
He wants $2.6 billion from the city, and then he's going to try to find other people to come up with the other $9.8 billion. Because he's not putting money in this.
Hudson Yards, America's most private construction project ever in New York City. $24 billion. The A's have a plan that costs half that. I mean, come on. Know who you are, know where you are, and act accordingly. Libby Schaft has issued a statement. We share MLB's sense of urgency and their continued preference for Oakland. Today's statement makes it clear that the only viable path to keeping the A's rooted in Oakland is a ballpark on the waterfront. We have made great strides with the governor's certification of the new environmental report. Now, with the recent start of financial discussions with the A's, we call on our entire community, region, local partners included, to rally together to support a new financially viable, fiscally responsible, world-class waterfront neighborhood that enhances our city and region and keeps the A's in Oakland. Wait a minute. So we go from the only path to keeping the A's is a ballpark to a world-class waterfront neighborhood in two sentences. I mean, that's just... you don't even know what you're shooting at, and you can't hit either target anyway. And on all that note, because we don't want to just keep beating this dead horse. And this is a dead horse.
I don't mind beating a dead horse.
I know you like beating a dead horse. But what if I told you that the official brother of the show is stopping on by for the first time in a long time? Let's do it.
Standing on the corner in a white Godfather hat. He drives a long black gangster Cadillac. He
can steal a broad's mind, man, 3 or 4 minutes. It's not how long you talk, bro. It's what you put in it.
Look out!
All the way from Denver, Colorado. He was actually just out on the West Coast. He was in L.A. living that yacht life for just a minute, but now he's back home being a good guy once again. What's going on, McBride?
Oh, man, I'm sorry I called in the beginning of hostage negotiations. Y'all in the city, like, dang, man. I didn't know it was that deep, but my condolences.
Thank you. Thank you very, very much. So here's the deal. In Denver, you got this basketball team called the Nuggets that at the beginning of the year really looked like they could flirt with contention. Here they are at the end of the year, and they, I'm going to say, were contenders, because without Jamal Murray, you're not going to win, I don't think, anything, to be honest with you, except for a Jokic MVP. Will that be enough to satisfy you?
No, and it won't be, but I think you're living the tale of two teams. The team in the beginning of the season with Jamal Murray was definitely a contender, but if you look at this team, they are really, really good and playing really good basketball. I think Aaron Gordon coming over has done great things for him. He's a knockout defender, and when he finds his offense, he can beat Jamal Murray.
Dude, it's too bad that Murray got hurt out here. That was the path. You had the three put together. It was about to work. It was about to get interesting, and then the torn ACL, man. It happened at Chase Center. That sucked.
Well, you know, we got Jokic, and I think he's playing at even a higher level than he did last year. So, I mean, we'll see. I like our chances. I really do, especially with the Lakers playing the way they are. We got the season series with the Clippers. So the Suns, you know, worry me a little bit, but I think we can get past them. And then we got past Utah last year, so I think we have their number two. So we'll see. I'm saying this more as a fan than anything else, but I do really believe the Nuggets have a chance to do something special this year.
I was about to ask, which Western Conference team do you not think you can beat?
I think we can beat them all, and I think the reason is that we do have the true MVP of the league right now, and he gets everyone involved. He makes everyone better. You're talking about a dude who's averaging almost 30, 10 boards and 8 assists as a center, as a big man. So he's made everybody better on the team this year. That's what MVPs do. He's also raised everybody's level of play. So, you know, I really do believe that we can beat everybody.
Have you ever been this comfortable with a white boy leading the way on a basketball court?
Man, it's I mean, Bird. I mean, I mean, I love Jokic. And I mean, he's done everything that has been asked of him by this franchise, by this city. He's taken it seriously. He's lost a tremendous amount of weight. He's got himself in great shape. And, I mean, it's really
all right. Since you're Mr. Denver, you might know more than most. And, by the way, Tim Tebow's back in the NFL, so what comes around goes around. is there anything to think about in terms of Aaron Rodgers to the Denver Broncos?
I mean, that's all I'm hearing. I mean, it is the talk of the town here. And then even outside of here, you know, back in Bristol, I've reached out to a couple people. It's really legitimately still on the table. And I think June 1st, you may hear that announcement that Aaron Rodgers is the new quarterback of the Denver Broncos. I mean, why not? I mean, you have a bevy of weapons here. You have a defense who is really, you know, championship caliber. And I think with him and Courtland Sutton coming back this year, Judy, who, if he can wear some stick'em ball, you're looking at a really, really fine receiver. Noah Fant, a tight end. Okawebanon, who came from Missouri, is another tight end with tremendous skill. So you're talking about a team that could, with Aaron Rodgers, I mean, makes all the difference in the world. And it's like what happened with Peyton Manning here. You know, a quarterback coming to the end of his career and revitalizing this franchise.
It's worked out once before.
Well, I mean, it's working out again, and I think George Payton coming in and trying to prove that he's the man and getting away from or up under the Elway shadow in terms of, you know, running the team and making all the decisions with the personnel. I mean, that's something that really could happen. And, I mean, the Broncos have a lot of talent, and they have a lot of draft picks also.
You've explained why that's a great deal for Denver. But I never hear anybody explain why it's a great deal for Green Bay. And it seems to me until somebody can overwhelm Green Bay, like, and then overwhelm them again, this doesn't happen at all. So is this mostly just optimism burning in Denver, or is there a real recognized path to getting him that makes sense for both teams?
Well, I love that point, because it's always about the team who is supposed to be getting the superstar, and nobody talks about the team that is giving up that guy. You know, in what they'd be getting back is 3 first-round picks, Patrick Surtain, draft pick from this year, Drew Locke, the quarterback, which, you know, when you talk about him, he has tremendous upside. He's just never had the time or you know, coming in with COVID. But he's shown flash of really being somebody that could be a good starting quarterback in the NFL. You know, with that and the fact that Aaron Rodgers is not going to play there. I mean, I think with him, it's like, it's, I don't have to play here, and if you don't trade me, I'm done. And that's what it is. And then if you're Green Bay, you have a chance to move past him, you know, rebuild your team, be in the draft, have a quarterback that may or may not work out, you know what I'm saying? But you have Jordan Love there, too, who you drafted to replace Aaron Rodgers. So, you know, I mean, you talk about what Green Bay gets back is fixed, and it's something for nothing, because if he doesn't get out of there, he's not going to play.
I'll say this, that the Green Bay the Packers this week are like, hey, you know, this Jordan Love guy's not exactly ready to go, and we sure do love Aaron Rodgers, so they're going to try to put that marriage back together. I don't know, though. Aaron can hold a grudge. Hey, don't come to the West Coast without coming to San Francisco again, baby. We miss you.
I promise you, next time I'm out there, I will. I mean, the yacht life had me feeling like I was Thurston Howell, brother.
Yeah, look, I can't match yacht life. So if you got yacht life, you go ahead. But if you just want to come out here, roll one up and kick it, I'm your guy.
I got you, man. I was thinking about buying a boat, man. It was great out there. So, man, I got to stay away from out there, man. I'll get in trouble. Spinning.
We're on a boat.
Right. And she was looking at me like, what's that brother doing on that boat? Like, hey.
There you go. There you go.
Come on, man.
You're the best, buddy. There he is. And look at McBride and Ratto even making love. This is all coming together. I love it. I love when friends come together. The man, the myth, the legend.
The
Mr.
invitation
McBride.
Didn't seem to include me, though.
Oh, no, you're included in twisting it up.
Well, it's too late now because he didn't agree. He may not want me. That needed to be put out in front.
How often are you among the wanted, shall we say?
Never.
So,
and you know
consistent.
What? It works perfectly for me. Because I also don't want.
We have a little piece of news.
We got breaking news. What happened now?
The Utah Jazz announced that Donovan Mitchell will not play in the final 3 games of the regular season. We don't know when he will return, if he will be ready for the debut, their first game of the postseason, but he will not play before the playoffs
start. All right. So here we go. I need a little... I got to do a little internet browsing real quick here. I need a little internet browsing music. I'll be back with you in just a moment here as I pull up the NBA standings. Thank you very, very much. Geez, I wish the computer ran a little faster in
you
here.
You could have just
actually
asked.
Does. I know, but I had a little time to kill here. So if he's not playing the last 3, I just looked at this. Does that up the ante for how much Phoenix wants tonight's game? I mean, I think the world just got harder for the Golden State Warriors just in terms of the game that they're looking at tonight. Because Utah just felt like it cracked open the door for the Phoenix Suns to believe that they could be the one seed.
I think that door's been open for a while. I don't think it materially affects how hard Phoenix is going to play. And I don't think it affects how difficult it is for the Warriors to win a back-to-back with the 2 best teams in basketball.
Well, you're right about that. It doesn't affect the Warriors. But if the Suns were coming into tonight feeling it was in their best interest to be a little bit frisky, it feels like that just got doubled.
I mean, we can argue about percentages, but it only incrementally changes their urgency in my mind. I think they wanted to win this significantly before the Donovan Mitchell news.
Yeah,
moreover, the fact that it's just been announced suggests to me that the Suns knew about that hours ago, because the NBA pipeline works in concentric circles, and we're the last ones to learn anything.
Curry was talking about tonight in the context of the game they need to play tomorrow in his postgame from last night. Here's Curry on the Suns game tonight. But again, he's framing it all as tomorrow because this was last night's press conference.
The way things pan out, if we take care of our business and get in the bracket, we'll probably be playing one of them in the first round. So it's just a good experience to come off the OKC games where we obviously handled our business there, but you know, these are two different tests. So this will be a good one tomorrow. I mean, win or lose, it'll be a good, we'll be ready, but mentally to, I think they play two different styles, but you know, you're not going to play a back to back in the playoffs, but to come in with the right mindset of how to give ourselves a good, you know, start to the game, build momentum, understand that, you know, Phoenix is at the hotel down the street, resting up. Like, it'll be a good mental test for us to kind of come overcome the back-to-back situation and go out and back this up and validate what we did tonight.
Warriors, Suns tonight. When it comes to how it all lines up for them in the play-in, it's going to be really interesting to see what the matchup is. I know that there is every single network executive sitting in Bristol, sitting at TNT, who's ever going to be taking the play-in game package. You could not ask for more than a one-night, hey, how you doing, between the Warriors and the Lakers. That is tune-in, superstar-laden, hopefully everybody's healthy enough, ready to play basketball. That's what everyone will be counting on. Ray, I look back at the recap of the games the Warriors had against the Lakers. As sexy as this matchup is, I don't think the Warriors really want it.
They probably don't, but the alternative is being the nine, in which case you'll probably have to face them anyway. So, I mean, it's simply a question of whether you want them Tuesday or Thursday.
Game one of the Warriors-Lakers three-game series from this regular season. Game one was all the way back in January. The Warriors came roaring back. L.A. completely stopped playing a basketball game. I mean, there's no other way to say it. Yes, the Warriors were good in the fourth quarter. They won the fourth quarter by 13 points to give them a bucket win in the game, 115-113. You could argue that that was Kelly Oubre Jr.'s first good game of the year. He found the way that night. Eric Paschal had a good game that night. Steph had 26. He didn't shoot it well at Staples, though, and he didn't really that night either. He was 8 of 22 from the floor, 3 of 12 from downtown. But the Warriors won the game. No matter how proud of it you wanted to be, there was no doubt, watching it with your own two eyes, that the Lakers packing it up and stopping playing that game was part and parcel of the Warriors winning. In game two, the Lakers would remind everyone that game one was a little bit of a fluke, because the Lakers were embarrassed by that last meeting. So in game two, they let the Warriors feel it. The Lakers led by 20 after the first quarter. They led 73-44 at halftime and then won in a romp, 117-91. Draymond sprained his ankle that night. He left in the second quarter, didn't return. Part of the reason why the game got so ugly. Curry only had 16 points. Another part of the game why it got so ugly. And basically, Steve Kerr and company, by the fourth quarter, came around white-flagged the entire night. 22 minutes that evening for Brad Wanamaker. Remember your Wanamaker whenever you can. Game three against the Warriors, a 128-97 Lakers win. Warriors just get killed all night long on the glass and everywhere else. Steph had 27 points. But they got everything they wanted, the Lakers did. Montrezl Harrell just bullied James Wiseman in that game, if you remember it at all. And it was a rough one. So three games against the Warriors, the Lakers should basically be up three games to none. They summarily destroyed the Warriors in almost every single quarter that they played against them this year, except for the fourth quarter of the first game, where we all agree the key ingredient was the Lakers quitting.
And in games two and three, it should be noted, Anthony Davis was not a player.
There you go. Missing pieces, they're still clicking and beating the Warriors loud. Season series, Lakers 358, Warriors 303. The Lakers have been 55 points better than the Warriors over three games and have held Curry to 23-point-per-game scoring averages over their three games. They defend Curry well. They've done it twice without Anthony Davis. And the only time the Warriors got off was the one quarter the Lakers quit playing a basketball game in. It's a sexy matchup indeed. I don't know if any Warrior fan should really want it. We'll be back in a moment with Raja Bell. We talked to him earlier today. This is one of the best interviews Ray and I have done with a former NBA player in a long time. He and Logan Murdoch got a Ringer podcast. I see why Logan's working with the guy. Raja Bell is an A-plus guest. He's joining us next year on 95.7 The Game. And we are brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full-service banking, no compromises.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Raja Bell knows an awful lot about slapping the floor and playing defense. And if the Warriors are going to be anything come play-in tournament time, they're going to have to do that and stay hot, Steph Curry. To talk about the Suns in town, we're very happy to say hello to Raja Bell. Joining us here, Damon Bruce and Ray Ratto. Raja, thank you for joining us today. I know you're doing that Real Ones NBA podcast for The Ringer with Logan Murdoch, who obviously spends a lot of time right here in the Bay Area backyard. So it's great to have you on here today. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks for having me, fellas. Yeah, Logan is a proud Bay Area native, and I have to hear about it way too much for my taste. But he's a good dude, and I'm happy to be doing it. Thanks for having me on.
If this helps at all, you can backhand him. I've worked with him. You just bring across a quick right hand, he'll quiet down.
There you go. That's very nice. It's a good way to handle things, certainly in the workplace.
I'm glad I got the green light. I appreciate it.
Look at it this way. Raja might be able to do it, because this guy was nasty when he was out there playing basketball. That is for sure. We have Draymond Green, who obviously is a Swiss Army knife that is hard to compare to any other guy that really played. Now, maybe the position of center had to regress a little bit, not quite in the lands of Hakeem Olajuwon and Patrick Ewing anymore. But as the center regressed to more positionless basketball, Draymond Green, really, Raja, it looks like he is one of those rare 1 through 5 he can defend at all guys. And it's not overhype. It's not oversell. I don't know how many guys can really say, I defend all 5 positions at an elite level. I know Rudy Gobert is good. I know he's popping out on the perimeter better than ever. I know Capella's doing the same. But Draymond is just so different.
Yeah, he is the only guy that I can think of off the top that can really guard 1 through 5. I mean, those guys will go out there, and in today's NBA, you know, they're more switches than ever. I mean, they switch 90% of the time, so they're asked to be out on the perimeter, but they don't effectively really lock down or have the capability of locking down a one. If you put him on him for, you know, 50 to 60% of the game, that's, they're going to get, you know, exposed, and that's not really a knock on them. Those guys are huge. They're long. They're not, you know, used to naturally being in space. But Draymond is, and Draymond, I think, could effectively guard a one. You know, I'm not saying that he's locking any of them down like the Dame Lillards over the course of an entire night, but I think he could do an effective job on a one most of the night if you put him on him. So I would tend to agree with you. I mean, he's a very interesting player. He fills, you know, a lot of stats, a stat sheet, a lot of boxes for teams. And, you know, the beauty of a Draymond for a guy like me, it isn't necessarily what he does on the stat sheet or who he can guard. It's what he means to the team, to the fabric of the organization, to the culture that you're developing in a locker room. And those type of things you can't really put a price tag or a statistic on. It's you know, the character type of stuff that keeps guys understanding what a franchise is about and keeps them dedicated day in and day out to the goal at hand, which is to win championships. Someone has to drive that culture. I know Steph and Clay do it as well, but Draymond's a huge part of that.
So if you're coaching just a league average team, you know, some good players, enough to be a playoff team, how do you negate all the things that Green does? How do you sort of go at him and try to find the weaknesses that allow you to make him at least sort of a zero-sum player as opposed to the guy who changes so much on a night-to-night basis?
It's a really good question. I'm probably not the best person to answer. That's why I'm not an NBA head coach, but I'll give it a shot. What I would do to Draymond, offensively at least, and it's easier said than done. This is all in a vacuum, right? This would be just purely game plan on paper, would be, you know, to try to make him score the ball. Like, I would try to the best of my ability, cut off any outlets he had to shooters, stay home, you know, double Steph given any opportunity, and then completely deny the ball back to him. Again, much easier said than done. And even the peripheral players there, you know, I wouldn't give those guys the opportunities to catch and shoot off of Draymond's penetration. I I challenge him to continue to finish and, you know, see if he could theoretically get 45, you know, 46 or something like that. You know, the Sun, when I played with the Suns, the Mavericks and the Spurs were two teams we struggled with in playoffs. They took that approach to Amari and Steve. They said, look, we know you guys could both wind up with 35, but we trust that if we cut off Sean Marion and if we cut off Raja's 10 to 15 and we cut off Boris's 15 to 17 and we cut off Barbosa's 15, that we'll beat you. And it did. It played itself out over the course of those series. So that's the way I would approach Draymond, at least defensively, because he's so good at facilitating and he's always creating havoc. You know, on the defensive end, you know, I tend to think that, you know, the one way he could be exposed because he plays so many guys so well is with a real true big. And no one really wants to do that. No one has the time to come down and anchor, you know, a big to the block and just use the mismatch over and over and over. Aesthetically, it's not what people want to see. It's not the way guys are trained to play the game. But that's about all I could really think of because, you know, anywhere on the perimeter, he's pretty good. And pick and roll, he's pretty good. He can guard your man up. But if you had a Joel Embiid type of guy who's just a bully down there on the block and is really well-versed in back-to-the-basket footwork and finishing, that's what I would try to do to him if I had that at my disposal. I'd try to make, you know, that undersized five really pay with a old-school beat-em-up, I can get you 40 on this block type of player, and in the process I'm going to get you in foul trouble and now you're on the bench.
Again, I don't know how perfect to defend all positions Draymond would have been in the 80s, but the type of basketball we're playing right now, he is definitely a breed unto himself. Raja Bell, two-time all-defensive member, joining us here on 95.7 The Game. And as a guy, look, we all know that this is a score first, second, and third league. As a guy who was so dedicated to the craft of playing elite-level defense, I'm guessing it was up to you to be the coach on the floor in certain moments and times. How hard is it to be the guy to convince offensive-minded NBA players to do more defensively? Because I'm guessing that was part of your job.
Yeah, it was it was part of my job. You know, it's difficult. I mean, everyone loves to play offense. It's what you do in pickup games. It's what you grow up doing. And, you know, sometimes, you know, defense is a hard sell to guys. There were teams I played on where I had more success at it than others. Those teams tended to be more successful. But I think when you get on those successful rosters, you know, everyone's thought process is aligned. Typically, people's windows of opportunity are to some degree aligned. And so the sell is easier because, you know, it's an integral part of what you're doing. Every team that's won a championship in the last, I don't know, 10, 15 years that I can remember has been a top 10 team defensively. And, you know, and selling that is just part of what you have to do to be in that conversation. So, you know, you can't be afraid if you're talking about a guy like Draymond or even myself, like to play that role, you can't be afraid of the confrontation. The confrontation is going to be organic when you're that guy. Like, you have guys that don't want to do it, guys that think they're too nice to play, you know, defense and just don't understand how you know, important it is to execute that game plan as much as you can. Sure, we're going to make mistakes, but we got to hold each other accountable when we do and try to execute it to the highest percentage we can. And if you're going to be the guy that does that, you know, I was, Draymond is, there are going to be confrontations, but you can't be afraid of it. You got to stick to your guns. And then afterwards, you know, you go find that teammate and whoever it was that may have had a beef and you explain, look, this, your job is to score 30. Mine is to anchor this and make sure we're on the same page with that. And so I respect you and yours. You know, hopefully you can respect me and mine because they all come from the same place, which is trying to win some games.
Speaking specifically of Phoenix, this is probably the best defensive team they've had in some years. And because their MO was, well, we'll just score. We'll worry about defense if we have to. Who gets the most credit for changing that mindset? Is it Monty Williams? Is it Chris Paul? Is it something more organic? What made Phoenix view basketball differently this year?
Yeah, I think it's exactly who you said it was. I think, you know, it starts with Monty and what he preaches in training camp and the mantra that they're going to have through the season, like the culture he's trying to develop. But, you know, sometimes you have to have that guy that everybody respects, that guy that everyone knows his resume, in lockstep with you, preaching and talking the same thing you're talking when you're not around. So on the buses, in the locker rooms, when we're all sitting in the cold tub, you know, when we're out to dinner, you know, the conversation has to reflect what you were talking about as the head coach earlier in the day. So I think the two of them have worked well together. I also throw some credit at my man James Jones, who's doing a great job there in kind of finding pieces. I think the Jay Crowder piece is a really, really good piece to that defensive, gritty type of culture that you're trying to establish with your team. You know, I even think that the Torrey Craig piece was a really nice piece for that. So I think it starts with the two, but you got to give James some credit for finding pieces along the way that helped develop that. And then, the young kid from Villanova, I'm drawing a blank on his name right now. I don't know why I hate to do that. But
Bridges?
Mikal Bridges is an excellent defender. Like, they've got nice pieces, but it certainly starts at the top with your best player or your 1A or 1B and then your coach.
Rajah Bell joining us here. Suns in town taking on the Warriors tonight. What do you think of the play-in, by the way? Are you into it, not into it? Did you think it was a good idea, change your mind and come back to it? How do you feel?
Yeah, I'm cool with that. I've always saw the NBA as the league that wasn't afraid to tinker around the edges and step outside and look at things from a different perspective and see if they could make it more exciting. And so I appreciated it when they put it in. I hear guys beefing about it, but quite frankly, I didn't hear too many people beefing about it when they weren't in that situation the year before, at least the guys I've heard of recently. So as a fan just sitting back watching now, I'm tuning into games and watching them, and they've got a level of playoff intensity that I enjoy. And I don't watch every game throughout the season because they don't have that. And I'll tune in now because these games, there's something on the line. Guys are invested, and you can see it. You can feel that intensity if you played and you know how to, like, identify it. Those aren't regular, like, December games. Like, these are heated exchanges with something on the line, and I appreciate it.
So you played – I'm looking at your career here. You played through your age 35 season, and Chris Paul is in his age 35 season right now. How harder was it for you and your body to get up to play an NBA game in your last year? And is Chris Paul like an alien or a freak of nature? How's that happening?
Yeah, well, I got to give him a lot of credit. I mean, at 35, I had certainly lost a step. I could see things and couldn't get to them the way I thought I could. I was losing a little bit of lift on my jump shot, but I think I could have still been serviceable. The end of my career kind of played out in a weird way, but I think these guys do such a great job, like Chris included, in really taking care of their bodies in a way that I didn't really understand when I played, really fueling it the way it needs to be fueled and spending and committing the resources to the recovery and the injury prevention and stuff like that. So
do you think it's a State Farm insurance and the injury prevention? Is that what it really is?
right. They're just doing great things with the body. And so he's remarkable. What, able to do that at 35 and still be an MVP candidate. Like, I mean, you just got to give him all the credit in the world. But generally speaking, you know, these guys, Tom Brady outside the world of basketball, like, these guys really know how to dial in and take care of that body and extending careers.
You were teammates with Steph Curry for one game. One game. Did you realize in the 23 minutes you were out on that court that you were playing with one of the greatest basketball? Of course you didn't. Nobody saw this coming. What was your impression of Curry when you met him, and can you believe what he has become?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I came from Charlotte, and his dad, Dell, was like on the broadcast there. So I watched him at Davidson, and I'd ask Dell about him a lot, you know, and we'd have these conversations. Dell was a good dude. I was into golf. They were clearly into golf. And so I knew him through his dad before I got to Golden State. In that game, like, I had no idea. But I moved out after I had my wrist surgery that year. I went back home after that game, had wrist surgery, and I came back out to the Bay. And I got to be in practices. I got to be around him. I got to be at the games on the bench. There were things that he did in flashes as a rookie where you knew you were watching something different. Now, as a rookie, he wasn't capturing that, like, every minute of every game. Like, he hadn't matured into that yet. But I knew that there was something there. I couldn't tell you that he would have revolutionized the game and been what he is today. But you knew that he was better than people even gave him credit for coming out of Davidson, which was, you know, he lit the world on fire at Davidson. But you could see him doing things and making NBA players look silly where you were like, okay, yeah, this is different.
This has been an awesome interview. You've been fantastic. You've shared so much with us. I'm going to push it as far as I can go.
You're good, man. I'm having a good time. What's up?
As we move into our 5 o'clock hour.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 in San Francisco. It's an Odyssey station.
You're the man who clotheslined Kobe Bryant, for goodness sakes. How would you defend Steph Curry?
How would I defend?
Would you clothesline Steph Curry?
Yeah, well, I actually tried. I think the first time I played against him, I had signed with Utah. I think I tried to bully him a little bit. I pushed him and shoved him. It didn't work, though. So I had to flip into some other, strategy midstream. I really don't know what you would do with Steph because, unlike some of these guards that are really dancing on the ball so much, I could employ a strategy for that. Steph isn't on the ball that much anymore. Now, he'll cook you if he's on the ball, but, so much of what they do is Steph, seeing if he can get one off and moving the ball, and then a la Reggie and Rip Hamilton and Ray Allen, he's just perpetual motion after that. And so as a defender, you're only really as good as the help you get or the communication on the screen. Like, there was a miscommunication. I stayed with the big didn't stay with Steph, boom, shots in the air. Or he didn't show hard enough shots. So I don't know how you would guard him. It's impossible. All I would say is if they ever brought a secondary defender to Steph Curry, and it was organic, I would just trap him. Especially, no disrespect to the team he's on now, but without Clay and KD, I would just have to roll the dice that the other Warriors were going to beat me. And anytime a secondary defender came into the mix, I would trap the hell out of him, make him pass it, and then I'd do my damnedest to kind of deny him the ball back.
Do you like, it's tough to ask you this because we don't even know who the matchup is going to be, but would you give the Warriors a puncher's chance in any playoff scenario? We're not talking about the play-in. Assuming that they make it in the playoffs, would you give them a puncher's chance against either Utah or Phoenix?
Oh, that's tough. That's tough because I tell you they could win a playoff game because with Steph and what they're doing out there and Draymond, I think, they in a one-game scenario. It's tough for me over 7. My answer is probably not. I'm not a puncher's chance. I give him a chance because you still have one of the best players on the planet, and to you guys' point, one of the best 5s in the game. 7 games is a long series. 4 is a lot of games to win, and I just don't know how much real experience they have beyond that. And playoffs require you to have some seasoning. They require you to have been in the wars and kind of learned through trial and error and having your heart broken and figuring it out. And I don't know that there's enough of that surrounding those two. If you made me pick a team that they could have a shot against, it would probably be Phoenix. But I don't really think so. I hate to have to say that on a Bay Area station.
No. Hey, look, we want you here because you're going to tell us what you really think. That's what makes you a valuable conversation. And I tell you, Logan Murdoch's got a hell of a co-host. This was fantastic. Please, promote the podcast. What are you guys cooking up next and when you dropping it?
Yeah, man, we're called the Real Ones Pod. We come out Mondays and Thursdays. We're on the Ringer Network, Spotify. You can get us wherever you get your podcast. But Logan is super cool, man. I've learned a lot working with him, a lot about the Bay Area working with him. And we just have a good time. We're on there. We're not a traditional, like, X and O analytical pod. We just like to talk and have a good time, tell stories, and chop it up. So check us out.
It's a great podcast. I have heard it, and you are great at it. Thank you so much, Raja Bell, for joining us today. This was awesome.
Appreciate it, guys.
And tell Logan we tolerated him.
Fair enough.
There we go. We got Logan Murdoch tolerance here on the show. We indeed do.
We had it. that ship has sailed.
I'll tell you what, the guy has done a great job with his career, growing it. I mean, you either were good enough to get noticed covering the Warriors in the last few years and you moved on to something else, or you're here still, and he did good enough work to move on to something else, get noticed, I love to see good things happen to good, hardworking people. What I appreciate is the people that, Ray, who cover teams that are there, actually there in the building night after night. Logan gets full credit for that. I just saw that Jenny McCulley got some award. Jenny McCulley had a really nice article written about her. He says it's the Real Ones podcast. The Real Ones are there every night. She's a real one. He's a real, Murdoch was a real one.
Yeah, being at games now is very much a luxury for most folks. We might have to change our definition about that. But the people who are closest to them are still the ones you have to go to. because it's harder and harder to get close to players. If you don't have their phone numbers and do not have a relationship that's strong enough for them to pick it up, you're hosed.
Anthony Slater obviously has a great relationship with this team that he's been covering oh so close, to the point where he and Draymond are pretty much on casual speaking terms in their formal interviews.
Who do you think should be defensive player of the year?
Anthony, you know me well, buddy. Y'all have a great night.
So that means it's you?
Basketball, I think you think it's me.
By the way, notice that was from Monty. That was Monty.
Yeah.
Throwing that last question at Draymond, which he answered walking away from the microphone up at the podium. Look, there is no doubt that this is a good time of the year. The Warriors, for the first time all season long, we can guarantee you what their future is going to look like. They are going to be in the play-in tournament. As a matter of fact, they're in right now. That's not going to change.
Their schedule is absolutely locked in until Tuesday.
I like how excited you are. Yes, and until Tuesday through the end of the regular season, we do have a locked-in schedule. But it is good to know, as Steve Kerr was saying, that you got an X marks the spot at the end of your year.
Great to check the box, as you said, and now we've got to keep going and just try to finish as strongly as possible. Obviously, Memphis is right with us, and San Antonio is right behind us, so we've got to keep winning.
And look, we don't want to go beating the same horse again. I hate the comedian who tells, the same jokes at every single show they do because they know they work, but this is something that we were talking about before, and I want to bring it up again because – at the beginning of the year, if we have told you Golden State Warriors are going to be 7, 8, 9, 10 and in the play-in, not an automatic playoff participant, it would have felt like we were selling them a little bit short. It would have felt like we were carefully measuring expectations against us doubting the team. But under the circumstances, and having had the pleasure of watching it all and understanding it a lot better and knowing what the challenges have been with the injuries and COVID and Wiseman and just not fitting together like puzzle pieces should really at any point in time all year. I don't think they had a single 5-game winning streak all year. With hindsight being 2020, Ray, it's the right place for them to be. They're not a bad team, and they're certainly not a very good team either.
But here's the trick, because everything you said is correct, but here's the trick. You open up the year. Most people think Kelly Oubre is going to be a standout performer, and they have their doubts about Andrew Wiggins, particularly defensively. Oubre is in and out. Wiggins suddenly can defend. So there's two things you hadn't figured on. You thought that Weissman would be farther along than he was, and he wasn't. In fact, they were better without him than with him. So essentially, you've now taken the second pick in the draft and removed it, just in terms of effectiveness, from the planning. So that's three things that you hadn't figured on. And fourth, you hadn't figured on Curry becoming an Uber scorer. Because while he could score in the past, he's done this night after night, with numbers that usually were like spikes in his resume. His game logs would have a 40-point game here, a 38-point game there. But the last 20 games has basically been him taking all his best games from all the other years and piling them on top of each other in a big Jenga pile.
Right. He got Kobe gaudy scoring numbers.
Yeah. So now there's five things that weren't supposed to happen that did. And they still end up either eighth or ninth. So, yeah, I think they got there in the least predictable way possible.
Looking back at it all, though, it makes a little bit more sense. And they didn't miss the mark. It's actually kind of impressive that they hit this mark, given that they've been a one-man army with unpredictable performances defining the season as much as anything else. It's been great.
Well, and the fact that they figured out defense, which is something you would have thought they would have struggled with.
By the way, 14 years ago today, Baron Davis dunked on Andre Kirilenko. That team didn't go very far beyond that, but it was certainly a night. And it was certainly a moment. And it's probably the only moment, as I was telling you earlier, Ray, where the video reaction might have been louder than the actual moment because people get distracted. Maybe you missed it with your own two eyes. By the time the dunk happened and everybody was watching the replay, the reaction to the replay is maybe the loudest that building I think it's ever been. It was awesome. You got Baron Davis pulling up his shirt to basically say, I did that unarmed. Look at what I just did. I have no weapons.
Yeah, and it speaks to the Warriors of that era that a game that ultimately led to nothing lasting was still the biggest moment they had because they ended up losing the next game to Utah and got knocked out of the playoffs. But it was truly Warrior-like in that even a relatively modest accomplishment sort of punctuated with a single great moment has sort of endured as long as it has. Because ultimately, in most cases, well, it was a great-looking dunk in a series they didn't win. But because they'd been in so few series over the previous 10 years or the five that followed it, it stands out like a sore thumb because it is their high watermark for almost 20 years.
In order to make that kind of noise, you have to be starving. You have to be rabid. You have to be ravenous to make noise like that.
Someone showed you a tater tot, and you decided it was steak.
Yeah. What's the old Eddie Murphy line? He's like, what is that, a saltine? Just a saltine cracker to a starving person.
Yeah.
Is a four-star meal. That was a four-star dunk to the starving fan base at the time, and we believe was the first decent basketball anybody got around here in a long time. 14 years ago, though, man. Good God, I'm getting old. I can't believe that there are 14 years in between that moment and today.
I look at you every day. Getting old is not what has happened here. You got old.
Thank you. Thank you very, very much.
And this is coming from somebody with a face like a bag full of melted caramel.
By the way, there are yummy sea salt-infused caramels on top of the break room refrigerator. If you want to take one of those on your way out the door, I suggest you do. They were good. How about this? Through 760 career games, since we were just talking with Rajah Bell, the man who didn't dodge the fact that he clotheslined Kobe Bryant. Through 760 career games, Kobe Bryant had scored 18,395 career points. Steph Curry, through 760 career games, has scored 18,367 points. Did you think Steph Curry was going to be throwing down career numbers like Kobe Bryant in a scoring category? I honestly did not. They're there. He's got them.
I thought, you know, through 2019 that he could do that because what he did establish by the end of that run was a level of longevity that would keep him playing and active for another minimum 5 years. And even though the next year he got hurt and missed a bunch of time, you never got the sense that that was career ending. I think Curry had established by then that he was going to be one of those rare athletes who got to retire when he wanted, not when the team wanted. And I still believe that so.
28 points separate Steph Curry and Kobe Bryant through the same number of career games played at this point in time in their careers. 28
and
points.
And he'll get that in the first quarter tonight.
He will. He probably will. If he takes my advice.
Yeah, in a game, they'll lose 146-141.
Hey, well, look, if that happens, battle tested. Let's see it. But look, Steph Curry has already eclipsed that if he had done the thing that I'm going to say again here. I'm going to keep on returning to it because I know that I'm right. The only reason why that was a close game last night is because Steph Curry didn't shoot enough threes. How did he win that game? Well, he hit the three that he shot, that he was stingy with on the night. And sure, Utah gets credit, but him only taking 13 threes officially gets filed under finable offense in my mind. Steph Curry only shooting 13 threes means that's nuts. Let's not do that anymore. It's got to be 15. It should be 20. Look, I think that the movie Predator is like one of the greatest action-adventure movies. It's like peak Schwarzenegger. You know what the star of the movie Predator was? Wasn't the Predator. Wasn't Arnold. Wasn't Carl Weathers. It was the Gatling gun that was carried by Jesse the Body Ventura. When you got a weapon like that and you see it, you can't get enough of it. Steph Curry is this team's Gatling gun. Give me more Gatling gun. It's the only way that it's the only way Predator could have gotten better. It's the only way Steph Curry can get better is if he pulls out the Gatling gun more and more and more.
You do know that mentioning the word Gatling in connection with this franchise is not a good idea.
Bravo. Bravo. Yes, that's an historically accurate.
Put it on the tee. It will be driven.
Yeah, okay. You know what? Then I'm not even going to continue making my point because that was such a good touche. I'll give it to you. Today, the Giants won a baseball game.
McGee tries it again. He struck him out. The high, hard one up out of the strike zone. In the final analysis, he did not have to throw him a strike. The ball game is over. A save from McGee, and the Giants sweep this two-game series from the Texas Rangers.
That's a 4-1 homestand, boys and girls. John Miller with the call on NBC Sports Bay Area, and that is a better start to a year than anybody had predicted for this baseball team. The other baseball team, which of course today decided that instead of letting anyone get excited about the direction the A's are headed in, would crush the hopes, spirits, and dreams of everyone in Oakland by letting everyone know that, yeah, you know, we're more interested in who our next mistress could be rather than we are staying in this marriage. It's very on brand for them. It sucks because Chris Bassett's going to open a series at Fenway tonight. This is two first-place teams. It's supposed to be about baseball. We were right in the middle of frickin' Jed Lowry Appreciation Week, and this happens.
Maybe this is a direct reaction to Jed Lowry Appreciation Week.
It's my fault.
I'm good with that. Let's go. let's run with that a while.
I mean, if I can screw up the Gatling gun thing, I can screw this up too.
But you didn't screw up the Gatling gun. You just walked me into an easy one. That's all. This is always the undercurrent with this team. It's that they're always looking around for something better instead of taking the thing they have and making it as good as it can be. And this is not about the ball team. Given the financial constrictions that are placed on this team on a yearly basis, it's done better than it had any right to expect it would. And Billy Beane and David Forst have sort of been put in the way of a lot of the abuse that fans have when a familiar player gets moved.
It's not their fault.
But no, they're following orders. And the orders aren't necessarily get rid of Marcus Semien. It's if you can sign him to work for free, you can keep him. And they've done that time and again. And they're going to do it again with these guys because if all of a sudden the future of the team in your town is in play, wallets get closed even tighter than they have been in the past. It's a precursor for the crap to come.
If not for Billy Beane, David Forrest, and let's give full credit to Bob Melvin, who is a genius baseball manager. I mean, the A's have probably already relocated. I mean, they are the only credibility, those three men, that this franchise has, because anything above them is to be laughed at.
Actually, I'm not sure that's right, but here's the reason why. Hear me out. The baseball team thrives despite what goes on upstairs. It's almost like they're a separate unit of the company. In fact, they are a separate unit of the company.
Right, and these guys make up that separate successful unit.
Yeah, but John Fisher and before he got bought out, Lou Wolf, they've been tasked with one thing. Whatever the baseball team does or doesn't do, they've wanted it to be somewhere else. And every time they've tried, they failed miserably, and they blamed nearly everybody, including the Giants, for this, except their own blundering nitwittery, because they're the ones who thought they could get permission to move to San Jose without ever going to an owner's meeting and pressing the flesh with the guys who would vote on their future. They just thought, oh, Bud Selig will take care of it for us. Because Bud and Lou are pals.
Are pals, yeah.
And Bud Selig, who gets ripped a new one whenever his name comes up, basically said, no, I'm not doing anything for you on that. So in some ways, he's extended the A shelf life here.
Someone says, could you ask Ray if the Giants have blood on their hands with the San Jose territorial rights? I don't even really need to ask Ray because he'll tell you it's not blood on their hands. It's business. And the Giants made the singular grit. The Giants' two best baseball decisions in terms of baseball business is building 24 Willie Mays Plaza and earning the territorial rights to San Jose that were given to them by an incredibly stupid team.
Ignoring that last part, because I don't think that's really how it broke down.
The A's did not have to concede San Jose like they did.
They did not, but Bob Lurie and Walter Haas were friends and remained friends throughout. And Lurie was desperately trying to get out of the Candlestick Park hellhole. And Walter Haas says, well, I have no intention of ever moving this team, so I don't need the territorial rights to a place I'm not going to move to.
Short-sighted.
Well, no, it's not short-sighted for him.
You see the future or you don't.
That's not seeing the future. I mean, as long as he lived, the A's are going to stay in Oakland. But there's nothing he could do to prevent them from leaving once he died. But it's not about, you know, not having the territorial rights. It's about refusing to make it work in Oakland, where Walter Haas had made it work in Oakland. The fact is the people who bought the team from the Haas family and then the people who bought it from those guys didn't want to be in Oakland, and they still bought the team. So it's not about, oh, they should have kept the rights to San Jose. Why? Because the team would leave it, would have left Oakland already. What are you gaining with that?
I mean,
I don't mean to yell at you, but you're the only guy in the room.
So in the moment, what do you gain? Nothing. In the future, what was there to gain? Everything.
Not for him. I mean, his said, this team belongs in Oakland, and he made that clear time and again.
You've got to be thinking two moves down the chessboard, Ray.
Except that his chessboard ends when he dies, and after that, there's nothing he can do to stop it.
True.
And the A's would have gotten the votes to win the territorial rights if they'd bothered to try to get them. That's the thing. The Giants didn't have such a stranglehold on those rights that they could tell the other owners in baseball, we're keeping this forever. Larry Bear was not a popular figure with the other owners in baseball. That could have been done with a little bit of elbow grease, and John Fisher and Lou Wolf didn't want to apply any of it because they thought somebody else would carry their water. They failed at it, and the hell with them.
You want to know what totally screwed up too? And it's a shame because not that we wanted them to leave Oakland ever, but the San Jose's would have been the best name money could buy in terms of relocating, and it works with your actual team nickname. The San Jose's would have been a like chef's kiss level perfect.
You know, when you start thinking like a marketer, you besmirch the name that you've handed to your son. Never think like a marketer.
If it weren't for radio, I'm probably in ad sales and marketing. I'm one of those guys.
I don't know you. Let's get out of here.
Bag alert. It's a bag.
Alert. Major bag alert.
That's it. That's all we got time for. Hey, thanks to Raja Bell for stopping on by today. He was fantastic. He really, really was. We'll have much more tomorrow for you. Wrapping up whatever happens tonight at Chase Center, obviously. Did you see that Alex Rodriguez can't commit to J-Lo or the Minnesota Timberwolves? We'll have to talk about that tomorrow, too. But we got an awful lot of stuff coming up still later on this week. Thank you so much for tuning in today. This was a fun one. Again, good luck to the Warriors tonight. They got another big one on their schedule, and getting you ready for it coming up next is Warriors Live. So stick around. J.D., Covey, and Jim Barnett going to get you ready for tip-off at 7 o'clock tonight. Here on 95.7 The Game. In the meantime, remember, sports don't build character, they reveal it.
And like that, he's gone.